thing is you have to get together with your employer and try to sort of figure out what you want. Do you want to hang on to a certain amount of money per paycheck the way this woman did, Ms. Speciale did, or do you want to get a refund at the end of the year? The tough thing is we're hearing that the IRS is in fact redesigning W-4 forms, which are the forms that you fill out when you start a new job and you're going to determine your withholding. And they're in fact going to get more complicated. This is the crazy thing. The United States makes it incredibly complicated to fill out your taxes, and it's just going to get more complicated.
We just went through a really nasty tax year where a lot of people got surprises after they sat down with their CPAs or after they sat down at the dinner table to figure out what they owe to the federal government. I was listening to a discussion recently between a radio show host and a caller, and the host says, can you name anything in the last 50 years where the Republicans drew it up and its principal recipient was working men and women? And the guy goes, well, the tax cut, me and my wife, we got $200 back or $300 back, and we wouldn't have got that back if it weren't for Trump's tax cut. And he said, almost 90% of the tax cuts that were in that bill passed at the end of 2017. He said 90% went to the top 1%. You were not the principal recipient. Yeah, but I got back $200 or $300, whatever it is. And he goes, and it went on a credit card, first of all, which y'all always complain about. Conservatives always complain about putting things on the national credit card. He said, also, you're going to have to claim that as income on the following year's taxes. So did you really do all that well? I put it as simple as this. My taxes about doubled, but Amazon paid absolutely nothing on $11 billion in profit. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Fire You Can't Put Out, episode number 297, as we're winding down. And I want to thank you so much for being here. So often we're hearing right now about how awesome the economy is, right? I mean, you look at all the numbers, and it seems pretty good. There are little underlying factors, things that a lot of folks don't pay attention to that suggest that maybe it's not that great. But I'm not even going to get into those kinds of economic nuts and bolts when it comes to economics. I'm an amateur for sure, but I spend an awful lot of time with this stuff. So I didn't go to school. I don't know any world-class economists, but I spend a lot of time reading about economics, and it's very dry. It's very boring. I can get my wife to talk to me about some of this stuff, but I definitely ain't getting the kids to talk about it. And I am no fun at barbecues when I bring up economics. So I'm going to bring it up here because there are a couple things that I want to point out to you about our awesome economy. So the headline here from CNBC, nearly 25% of Americans are going into debt trying to pay for necessities like food. Americans have an average of $6,500 in credit card debt. This according to a new Experience report. So how do they rack up that debt? A full 23% of Americans say that paying for basic necessities such as rent, utility, and food contributes to their credit card debt. So there's a ton of signs out there right now. Signs on fast food windows, signs on retailers. Now hiring now, doing on-the-spot interviews, now, we need people. And when you look at those signs, I'm sure you're thinking, hey, they're going begging for workers. How awesome is that? And that looks good because you say 2010, 2011, 2012, it was kind of tough, you know, seeing those signs, especially 2010. I mean, a now hiring sign, you know, looking for people. People would have just freaked out and taken whatever it was. But there are these signs everywhere now for now hiring, but they're all really crappy jobs. And I suspect that the reason that folks aren't jumping on those is because it's not going to cover what they need. So let's take Taco Bell, for example. Every single one of these I drive by, they're hiring, and they say that they have competitive wages. So I ask, oh, it's like $12.50 an hour, $25,000 a year, 12 months in a year, rent is somewhere between $1,300 and $1,500 a month. You might be able to live in somebody's closet for $1,100 a month. So if they accept your job and they work full time, they might just be able to rack up some debt at the end of the year because they were trying to pay for necessities. This is sexy time. Hell yeah. I think people aren't going for those anymore. And I think the folks that are probably going for them because it's another job. There are a lot of people that work multiple jobs. And there's a fight. There's an absolute knockdown, drag-out fight in conservative circles largely, and definitely among conservative politicians, to not raise the minimum wage. We can't do it. We can't afford it. I've even had people that I know, working people, turn to me and say, Melvin, if we raise the minimum wage, you're going to have to pay more for a Whopper. First of all, bucko, I don't buy Whoppers. But if I did, I would much rather pay for one and know that the money I paid went to make sure that the guy that made it isn't scraping the garbage cans at the end of the day looking for something to eat. Going out to eat is a luxury. A number of years ago, my family and I made the decision to stop accumulating stuff. We bring something in to the house, something has to go out. The one exception to that is the business. So obviously with the business, I accumulate quite a bit of stuff, and unfortunately, I need it all. But with anything else, with furniture, with clothing, we bring something out, something has to go back out of the house. We're not going to accumulate more stuff. And because we've decided to accumulate less stuff, we actually end up with more money saved than before. Because you get into this fit, you know, and it's largely because of, as I talked about a number of weeks ago, internalizing capitalism. We're constantly surrounded by ads. Radio, television, computer. You need this. You need this. Look how much happier people are with this. Look how much happier people are with that. Don't you want to be that much happier when you have this thing or when you visit this place? And I'm not going to lie. I, like anybody else, bought into that for so many years. And I'd buy something, and I would. I'd be happy that I bought it. Probably largely because, well, the ad told me I was going to be happy. And then I wasn't happy. And then the newness wore off, and I needed something else. And then I need that. Now, I come from poverty, so mine was a little bit worse than other people's. But once I looked around at all of my accumulated stuff, and when you buy something, it, unless it's a house, it generally or jewelry, it doesn't generally hold its value all that well. And this year, and last year largely, as I made multiple runs to the city dump, I realized I don't need this stuff. And so the way we spend our money now, our discretionary income, is on experiences, theme parks, a weekend at the beach, going out to eat. The places that we go out to eat are almost never chains, because we want to know that if it's a local business, if you have a chain, say Red Robin, okay? And we might go to Red Robin once a year, and that's because my eldest daughter really likes that place. But I know that Red Robin is a chain and very likely isn't treating their employees very well. And one of the reasons for that is because the person that is screwing them on their wages, or potentially screwing them on their wages, I don't know what they make. I just assume that all chains are screwing people. The person that is screwing them on their wages does not have to look their employees in the face. And so therefore they can screw them and then have some, you know, some low level manager have to face those people. They never have to face them directly. You go with another place, like say a brewery that only has one location, or a local restaurant that maybe only has a handful of locations. If that employer is screwing those employees, then they have to face them. So it's far more likely that they're going to pay them better. I've never believed in the idea that if we raise the minimum wage, now we've been arguing for $15 an hour for so long now, $15 an hour isn't even going to kind of cut it. At $15 an hour, say your rent is $13 or $1,400 a month, okay? So let's just go with $13. So you stretch that over 10 months, you got $13,000, then $4,300, and then $50. Okay, so more than half of what you make, even at $15 an hour, more than half of what you make goes right to rent. Now, hold on. You've also got electricity. And your electricity bill is potentially going to triple in the wintertime and more increasingly in the summertime because you have to run an air conditioner. And hold on, food isn't getting any cheaper either. And you're not taking home, if you make $15 an hour, you're not straight taking home $30,000 a year. You're likely paying about a 20% tax rate. See? So even $15 an hour isn't cutting it anymore. The headline over at CBS News, minimum wage would be $33 today if it grew like Wall Street bonuses have. Despite the decline, the recent decline in Wall Street bonuses are 52% higher than a decade ago. 52% higher than a decade ago. Are you making 52% more money than you did a decade ago? I suppose potentially, but not very likely because that's when we had an economic crash. If the hourly minimum wage had kept pace with growth as the same growth as Wall Street bonuses, the hourly baseline wage would be $33.51 an hour. Ask me. We cannot afford that. Wall Street isn't adding any money. They aren't adding anything to the economy. It's a handful of really, really rich white dudes that are taking this money off, that's just scraping money off the top for themselves. I never hear anybody say that we can't afford those Wall Street bonuses. I never hear anybody say that we can't afford this exorbitant CEO pay. Let me give you another headline here. This one from Forbes. How many workers must live in poverty for a McDonald's CEO to make $21.8 million? Yes. At McDonald's, CEO Stephen Easterbrook's compensation was $21,761,052 last year, up from $15,355,746 in 2016. And hold on. So his pay, the CEO of McDonald's, went from just over 15 million in 2016, okay, to last year, 2018. He made $6 million more. Now, hold on. You ask me, that's the thing that we cannot afford. And that money, you might go, well, whatever, McDonald's is a successful business and they're doing it right and they just take. No. Hold on, Cupcake. The way that he makes that kind of money is by screwing his employees 16 different ways. And one of those ways is really low pay. And but that pay, as we discussed earlier, that pay's got to be made up somewhere. See, if you pay people less money than they need to live, they are not simply going to just live. They got to find a way to make those ends meet, as the old slogan goes. And they're not just going to die either, although they could. And the way that money is made up is by you. Yeah, it's by you. Housing assistance, heating assistance, food assistance. I don't hear anybody complaining about the CEO pay. But what I do hear them complaining about is these goddamn people on welfare. Why don't they just get a job? Hey, knucklehead, they have a job. Sometimes they have several, but it doesn't pay enough. And why doesn't it pay enough? Because the CEO needs to get a $3 million raise every single year that he's the CEO. What does the CEO do to make that kind of money? Now, if he made, say, $1 million a year, is anybody going to cry for him? Anybody going to be weeping for him? If you made $1 million a year. Say he made $2 million a year. He's a CEO, which is a very heavy, heavy job. Fine. $2, $3 million a year. Okay, maybe. But the reason they pay him that exorbitant amount of money is because, in my opinion, you have to be a sociopath in order to do that job. Because the culture of the company is such that they do not treat their employees well. The culture of the company is such that they lobby for laws that screw their employees. They lobby for laws to keep wages low. They lobby for laws that make sure that we can't get affordable health care. They lobby for laws that kill protections for workers. They do all these, and you have to be a sociopath. You have to love the fact that your workers make you so much money, but you also have to be willing to F them over and F them over hard. And the CEO of McDonald's is willing to do that. And increasingly, and it pains me to say this, as a person that buys stuff from this company, that's increasingly becoming the mantra of Amazon as well. The thing that really, and this should bother everybody, the thing that really makes me think about this in far different terms, about the fact that unrestrained laissez-faire capitalism is failing, is the number of homeless people. So in conservative areas, they'll look around and they'll say, get a job! Oh my God, shut up. And then in progressive areas, conservatives look to those areas and see the homeless people and go, see, liberalism is failing. We're not operating under the rules of liberalism. We're not operating under the rules of fair trade. We're not operating under the rules of workers' rights. We're not operating under the rules of fair wages. We're all operating under the rules of largely unrestrained laissez-faire capitalism, where we shed a tear every time a CEO has to pay his employees a little bit more money, and we get into a flying, pissing rage when working people ask for a cost of living increase. The homeless people are all I need. I don't need to suffer. I don't need to hear the hard luck stories of the people that I know. I know that it's there and it kills me. But the thing that just destroys me to my very core is the homeless situation. Seeing people use the restroom outside, seeing people eating off the ground or out of garbage cans, folks with addictions. I saw a dude the other day walking down the street, just picking through cigarette butts, trying to find one with enough of a tip on it that he could smoke it and get the nicotine that he needed. You know, because he's got an addiction, and I don't know what that's like, but that just kills me. And I see a lot of homeless people smoking. You go, hey, they got money for cigarettes. No. Listen here, Loopy. They have an addiction, okay? They don't have a bunch of money. They have an addiction. So the homeless, we need to do something about it. And I've said this across almost 300 shows now. I can't get a lot of people to come along with me. And that's illustrated by the fact that the country, even so much as one person voted for Donald Trump. I can't get the point. But I'm going to hammer on this until this show stops in a few episodes. So what can we do? What'd they do in Giuliani's New York? Well, he just sent them upstate. What? Yeah. He bought a one-way Greyhound ticket upstate and just sent them to somewhere where New Yorkers, because New York gets a lot of tourists. So they just sent them somewhere upstate where the tourists don't have to see them anymore. Hey, look at that. New York is working. No, New York is not working. San Francisco is not working. Portland is not working. One of the more deeply conservative places that has a lot of opulence. I used to live here. I still know a few people that live here. San Diego. And San Diego, I've read a lot of ridiculous things into this microphone over a number of years about how cities decided that they were going to deal with homelessness. This has got to be the worst. This has got to be the absolute worst. This from KPBS. The San Diego Council voted Tuesday in favor of an ordinance that places a limited ban on residents sleeping overnight or living in their cars within city limits. The ordinance makes it illegal for residents to sleep in their vehicles from 9 p.m. to 6 a.m. or at any time within 500 feet of a residence or school, excluding colleges and universities. The ordinance considers residents to be living in their vehicle if they use it for things like sleeping, bathing, or preparing meals. They're trying to ban people living in their cars. Now, hold on. There is one thing. Okay, they have a thing called safe parking lots. And there's four of them right now. And there's another one that's set to open in June. And they said that there's space there. But see that? It's already tough being on the street. And you need to be close to services. And you need to be close to resources. And of course, because there's so much trouble within the homeless community. Some homeless people don't want to be around other homeless people. There's any number of reasons why folks could be homeless. And as much as conservatives like to feed us this line about how they're just lazy and they don't want to work, it's not true. It's simply not true. Actually, there's an awful lot of homeless people that work. My wife works in a school and she has homeless kids in the school. The parents are working. The kids have some food and the kids have some clothing, although most of their meals do come from the school. They're attending school, but they're homeless. And there's people that work at the school called homeless liaisons. So there's lots of homeless people that work. But once again, we can't afford to get the wages up there. And banning homelessness isn't going to take care of the problem. Simple solution. Nobody wants to hear it. I feel like that dude at a party that's had too many drinks, and I'm going to tell you what I think. The CEO of McDonald's does not need to make $21 million a year. He doesn't. And if somebody makes 15 or 20, whatever it takes to get the living wage up. And if we can't, if we can afford to pay CEOs $21 million a year, but cannot afford to pay the workers who make those CEOs rich, make those companies rich, we cannot afford to pay them what it costs to live inside the society that we are operating in, then you are just going to have to admit that capitalism has failed. Capitalism in its current state has failed. But I feel pretty confident that nobody's going to be willing to admit that. Well, not a lot of conservative individuals anyway.
There's nothing wrong with taking information from Russians.
There's nothing wrong with taking
information.
Depends
on where it came from.
It is now okay for political campaigns to work with material stolen by foreign adversaries?
Well, it depends on the stolen material.
What we've learned in the past couple of years with Donald John Trump as president is that cheating is okay. Mitch McConnell was asked recently, because we are going to be inside of an election year pretty damn quick, he was asked by a reporter, hey, if a Supreme Court vacancy comes up, in the election year, what are you going to do? And he said, I'm going to fill it. He didn't even hesitate. He said, I'm going to fill it. And everybody in the room had a good laugh. Oh, God. Because cheating is okay. This is what we learned. Cheating is okay. You got some information from Russians? It's okay. You know, all these countries with their dictators and dark overlords help your guy win. It's okay. You lost by 3 million votes. Cheating is okay. It's okay. It's no problem. But it is not okay. There is a hunger for American-made goods. There are people that are with me on this that want to see their fellow Americans, their countrymen working and doing okay, which is why we get so excited when we see something made in America. Oh my God, I don't even know what it is, but I want to buy it because it's made in America. And we do. We've got that patriotism within us. The president has been levying all kinds of tariffs recently, thinking that that's just going to fix the problem. And it doesn't, because you can't just drop a damn tariff, you know, without thinking about it. Work with some good economists. And I don't mean Larry Kudlow. We'll get to that stupid ass in a minute. But there is a hunger for American-made goods, and there's a lot of people that are willing to do the work. And one company decided that it was going to make something in America, right? And it was going to stamp it right on there and call it the Patriot Puck, 100% made in America. And a lot of people bought these pucks. My God, it's a hockey puck. I mean, hockey's not even that big in America, but people bought these damn pucks. Whoa, it's made in America. I got to buy me one of those. I don't even, you know, I don't play hockey, but I'm going to buy me one of those. And the headline here. LI firm sold Chinese hockey pucks as 100% American made. They weren't even made in America. And they've recently gotten in trouble for it. It's okay. Hey, it's okay. It's cheating. Cheating's not okay. And since there is a hunger for American-made goods, perhaps we can find a way somehow, you know, to make that work for us. And don't just lie about where it's made. Like, actually make it here. And with respect to the tariffs, we can do these in a very precise way to where it protects American industries. You know, we can give grants. We can say, hey, this product is not currently being made in America, whatever it is, blue jeans. Okay, say blue jeans. So we're going to make blue jeans in America. I'm sure there's a bunch of people with a business plan that would love to make blue jeans in America. Say, okay, what would it cost you to build your factory? What would it cost you to hire Americans at a living wage? And then how much would you have to sell those blue jeans for? Give that person a grant and then put a tariff on blue jeans coming into the country. You protect the industry, you help start the industry, but there's one more problem with that. And I'm not blind to this. The other problem with that is because wages have been so depressed across the board, what it actually costs to make a pair of blue jeans in America by an American worker might exceed what we can afford. It's another failure of capitalism. This system only works if we have slavery. And not just slavery here in America, but slavery in other countries. Our current state of capitalism only works if we have slavery. So with that, the economy's not that great, is it? It's not at all awesome. Yeah, CEOs are getting mad rich. But you and I are getting left behind and further behind every year. You say, well, Melvin, fine, we get it. Unrestrained capitalism isn't working. Conservatism. Modern day conservatism is not working. The president. Oh, wait, the president. The president's a conservative. He will not get reelected. He would not get reelected if people knew these things about the economy or understood these things about the economy, right? No. Oh, no, he will. He very, very likely will.
President, how old is too old to be president?
Well, I think that I just feel like a young man. I'm so young. I can't believe it. I'm the youngest person. I am a young, vibrant man. I look at Joe. I don't know about him. I don't know. I would never say anyone's too old, but I know they're all making me look very young, both in terms of age and I think in terms of energy. I think you people know that better than anybody.
If you want to understand why the president doesn't understand your economic standing, doesn't understand misogyny, doesn't understand why he's a misogynist, doesn't understand race relation, just know this. He thinks he's young. Okay. He looks like a molded bag of oranges. He thinks he looks young. He thinks he's beautiful. He thinks he's 6 feet tall. He thinks he's thin. He thinks he's smart. So when you take all of that into consideration, The fact that he doesn't understand your economic situation should not surprise you. There's a headline over at Common Dreams, three dark and disturbing reasons why Trump could win again. So our unemployment rate is low right now, quite low, lower than it's been in years. But one of the things that we're not being told about why it's so low is they're counting everybody. They're counting part-time, they're counting less than part-time. If you work 1 hour a week, 1 hour a week, you are now considered employed. And all of that is factored into that number. And even though the numbers and the situation is not great for us as working people, what's being reported on the news is, look how high the Dow is. Look how high the S&P is. Look how low unemployment is. Look at these places going begging for workers. And we've explained what all of that means. And even though he's killing people right now with his stupid-ass tariffs, you know, that aren't done with any forethought at all, he could still get reelected. Then there's the socialism thing. There are no socialists, by the way. No socialists, by the way. None. None. Not running for president, not with any sort of power in America. But the Republicans have been saying that anybody that doesn't like the current state of capitalism, the capitalism that F's everybody over, anybody who does not like that system is clearly a socialist. Okay, if you have needs, if you have wants that are not being fulfilled, if you need affordable health care, if you need food, if you need a place to live, screw you. You're a socialist. Stop being so socialistic. And even though it's crap, that kind of thing is going to work. And the other thing that could help him get reelected is, well, the fact that people are in such economic turmoil right now. The conservatives have a scapegoat. That's what the immigration thing is. This is not a Christian president, and he's not treating these people in a Christian manner. He's awful, and he's cruel. And he's turned to you and said, hey, the reason you can't get a good job, the reason you can't afford health care, the reason you can't afford to eat, the reason you can't afford child care, the reason why, it's them. It's those brown people. They're taking your food. They're taking your jobs. You know, they're crowding out our schools and taking up spots that can be taken by your child. They're coming here and getting on welfare, which you're paying for, which is not true. You cannot get welfare if you're not a citizen. But they're not pointing out how much money they make, how much money Trump's making on the presidency. They're pointing to the brown, and it's all because of them. And the problem is, even though it's not true, it's working. And it's working like crazy. Yeah, this president's approval rating is somewhere in the 30s and 40s. But between screaming about socialism and, of course, the economy and the dirty refuse coming from the South, this guy can and will win re-election. The headline here, professor who has correctly predicted 9 presidential elections says Trump will win in 2020 unless Democrats impeach. An American university professor has correctly predicted the last 9 presidential elections and says that Trump will win in 2020 unless the Democrats, quote, grow a spine. So he sounds like he may be a little bit biased, but he has picked the last 9 elections. We talk about this guy all the time. I remember talking about him during the second when Bush was going to get reelected. It's a false dichotomy to say Democrats have a choice between doing what is right and doing what is constitutional and what is politically right. Impeachment is also politically right. So he says, let's not forget, impeachment is not just a vote in the House. It involves public hearings as part of an impeachment inquiry, which everyone forgets. At this time, in Nixon's presidency, sorry, impeachment, people that wanted impeachment was somewhere in like the teens, like 13-15%. But after the hearings, without the actual impeachment, after the hearings, it was at about 60%. The people that want him impeached, that want Trump impeached right now, is somewhere in the 30s, okay? But I promise you, with the hearings, without even sending impeachment to the Senate, with just the hearings, I promise you it would skyrocket to over 60%. And with that, not only is he not going to get reelected, but it's going to be really hard for the neo-Nazis in the Senate to say, no, he can't be. And by the way, the Democrats will get way more power. All these people that won't come in for hearings right now, once there's an impeachment proceeding, it gives the Democrats a ton more power than they have now. But they need to start the impeachment hearings. And it's not just about the fact that he'd be reelected. Okay, but it's the fact that despite he's doing nothing that working people want, nothing, he will get reelected. Okay, he broke 1,000 different laws. I'm being facetious here. If you read the Mueller report, there are hundreds of cases of obstruction. It takes one to qualify for impeachment, and there are hundreds in the Mueller report. But let's say the Democrats don't grow a spine and we do make it all the way to the 2020 election. This guy hobbling along right now, who will skate to re-election. I have a problem. And I have a problem with Joe Biden.
Joe and I have very different pasts in terms of how we have voted and very different vision for the future. And that is something that we should be discussing. For example, all right, I voted against the war in Iraq. In fact, helped lead the opposition to what turned out to be the worst foreign policy disaster in the modern history of America. Joe voted for it. I voted against a NAFTA. I voted against permanent normal trade relations with China, two trade agreements which cost us millions of good-paying jobs. Joe supported those agreements. I voted against the deregulation of Wall Street. Joe supported that legislation, which I think, you know, many people agree with me, some don't, led to the Wall Street collapse of 2008.
There are a couple of polls right now that say that Joe is light years ahead of the rest of the pack. Couple of things. The number one thing that I'm hearing right now is we need to find someone that can beat Donald Trump. We need to find someone that can... Okay, hold on. Let's break this statement down, okay? Let me translate this for you. You know the dude in the White House with the diapers and the smartphone and the baby rattle who with some frequency reaches into his diaper and hurls the contents at people in the room. That guy. The guy who's wildly unfamiliar with the English language. The guy who doesn't understand how economics work. Okay, that guy. The super duper racist who uses neo-Nazi talking points. That guy. Okay, we need to find someone that can beat that guy. What? Is this a joke? Am I living in some sort of an alternate universe? Everybody should be able to beat that guy. So the number one determination that a lot of Democrats are making right now, and this is bore out by the science, is that they like Bernie Sanders and they like Elizabeth Warren and they like Pete Buttigieg, but we got to find someone that can beat him. Everybody can beat him. Can. Not necessarily will, but can if they do it right. So the number one way Democrats have decided early on to pick who they want to be the Democratic nominee is who they think can beat Donald Trump. And right now, a fair number of them are saying that it's Joe Biden. Now it's early, which doesn't mean that the poll numbers will stay as they are. But for one exception, the American media. American media outlets. CNN, MSNBC, CBS, Fox, they've all decided, the president himself, they've all decided that Joe is the guy. And if you listen to the coverage right now on any of these outlets, yeah, they'll throw a bone to some of these other candidates, but really they go right back to Joe because this is the guy. They've decided already. We had a problem with this in 2016 where they decided that Hillary Clinton, that was going to be the guy. How well did that work out? People didn't get who they wanted in the Democratic primary, and they decided not to turn out. There was an obituary that was written that year, some woman that died just before the election that said, hey, you know what? This is way better. Way better. Wrote her own obituary, knew she was dying. She said, this is still way better than having to choose between Trump and Hillary. That's how uninspired people were that year because, well, the Republicans, they got to pick their candidate, but the Democrats, they did not. And the media this year has already decided that Joe is the guy. You say, well, they don't really get to decide. It's when the ballots are passed, you know, during the primaries in Iowa and South Carolina and all these others. That's when people will really pick. Yeah, I like to think that. But I've also learned over the years that people do what their television tells them to do. And if their television is telling them that Joe's the guy right now, let's be frank, that's going to depress turnout. Someone that's inspired by, say, Eric Swalwell is going, no, never mind. No, Joe's the guy. So, I don't know, maybe I'll turn out, maybe I won't. The fact that our media has decided that Joe is the guy is going to depress turnout. It's changing minds now. And I think that the reason that they have decided that Joe is the guy is because Trump has decided that Joe is the guy. And our media is run for profit. And since Donald Trump has decided that he wants to pick the person that he's going to run against, the media realizes that, you know what? Donald Trump is really good. Really good for TV profits. I mean, the CEO of CBS said this back during the 2016 election. He goes, Trump may not be good for America. This is Les Moonves. He said, but it's really great for CBS. He's talking about from a profit motive. And nothing has changed now. That profit motive is still exactly the same. And so what they decide to cover on MSNBC isn't to inform you. It's to make money. What they decide to cover on CNN or CBS News is not about informing you. It's about drawing eyeballs to the television. What they decide to cover on Fox News is about drawing those eyeballs to the television and making as much money as they can. And all of the major outlets have decided that Joe is the guy, but not so fast, Joe. I don't want Joe to be the guy. And I hope he gets crushed during the primaries. And I don't care. I'm not going to take that back because with Joe Biden, we're going to get more of the same. Are you sick of the fact that nothing is changing? That this unrestrained laissez-faire capitalism has just held on and screwed us for the last 30 years? Are you sick of that? Not being able to afford your food and your health? If you're sick of that, then don't let the media pick your candidate. Word to the wise.
Especially when you see what goes on with some of the opinion hosts on this network. I mean, when you got Tucker Carlson saying that immigrants make America dirty, when you've got Laura Ingraham comparing detention centers with children in cages to summer camps, then there is a reason why anybody has to swallow hard and think twice before participating in this media ecosystem. But I also believe that even though some of those hosts are not always there in good faith, I think a lot of people tune into this network who do it in good faith. And there are a lot of Americans who my party can't blame if they are ignoring our message because they will never hear it if we don't go on and talk about it. And so it's why, whether it's going into the viewership of Fox News or whether geographically it's going into places where Democrats haven't been seen much. I think we've got to find people where they are, not change our values, but update our vocabulary so that we're truly connecting with Americans from coast to coast.
So that's Pete Buttigieg during his town hall on Fox News pointing out that, you know what? I understand that these people are Fox bots. His word, not mine. Or my word, not his. Sorry, Pete. He says, but we think that these people are with us too. You know, and we're not going to change our values, but we're going to explain to them in your media ecosystem. I love that he used it. God, he's so brilliant. In your media ecosystem, we're going to explain to you why we are a good idea. And it's brilliance like that, communication like that. And think about how horribly some of the other Democrats, including Hillary Clinton, just could not communicate with people. Now, I know he seems highfalutin and all the rest because he's so brainy and he reads so many damn books. But yo, America cannot be anti-intellectual anymore, and I think Pete's message is working. I think it's unfortunate that we might end up with our first gay president before our first woman president, but such is the power of misogyny in America. But if it's Pete, I'll take it. And I think the racial stuff is waning, at least a little bit. The headline from Time.com, 9 people showed up for a KKK rally in Dayton, Ohio, and they were drowned out by 600 protesters. When I read things like that, I go, yes, yes, you know, things are getting better. At least with respect to race, things, I mean, you don't always see it. The president's still using white power talking points, but things are getting better. But then there's this. I remember living in Spokane, Washington at the time, which is Kentucky. Okay, it's the Deep South. I remember when every single state had George Bush below 50%. The one place he was still above 60% in his approval rating was Idaho. And Spokane's right next to Idaho. And the reason for that is because there's so many neo-Nazis there. And they love this guy. They love conservatives. But they got sued for all of the Nazi stuff that the Nazis were doing. And I know I'm using that word a lot, and forgive me, out in North Idaho in Spokane. And they lost a lawsuit, and they lost their compound. I remember watching the backhoe, you know, moving close to their, and there was a big swastika on top of their compound. And I remember watching that backhoe just tear through that swastika. And I loved it. It was better than drugs. Well, things have changed a little bit. The headline here, hate makes a comeback in the Pacific Northwest. Now that Donald Trump is president, the neo-Nazis have gained back their strength. And they've gained back supporters. And they've gained new supporters in the age of Trump. And with that, they're making more money. And over in the Spokane, North Idaho panhandle, they're now going to build themselves another compound because this president has helped make hatred great again.
How would you handle the insults and the attacks and the tweets and all of that?
The tweets are, I don't care. We need to make sure that we're changing the channel from this show that he's created. Because what matters, and I get it, look, it's mesmerizing. It's hard for anybody to look away. Me too. It is the nature of grotesque things that you can't look away.
And you can throw shade like that. Bring people on your side and point out, hey, the things he's saying are wrong, the things he's doing are gross. Because I think there's still a lot of people that are with us that don't particularly care for it either. And when they hear Mayor Pete say things like that, and I'm getting more and more behind this guy every day. Not so fast. Joe's not the guy for me. This is the guy. But of course, he needs to start learning how to talk to African Americans, which, by the way, he's got this fledgling campaign, and I hope he gets it and gets it soon. Because right now, the African American vote is going to Joe, and Joe is the guy that helped write the super predator law back there in the 90s, which screwed the black community. But the black community is getting screwed even harder right now by the Trump administration. So they're willing to go back to the other guy that wrote the racist law that ruined a lot of their lives just so they don't have to deal with the super duper racist guy who's also a Nazi. We don't need to find ourselves in that kind of a situation. Oh, and then there's terrorism.
The president launched into several unrelated diatribes. One of those was commenting on the recent missile launches by the government of North Korea. And essentially, the president said he did not believe that the North Koreans had the capability to hit us here with ballistic missiles in the United States. And he did not believe that because President Putin had told him they did not. President Putin had told him that the North Koreans don't actually have those missiles.
And U.S. intelligence was telling the president what?
Intelligence officials in the briefing responded that that was not consistent with any of the intelligence our government possesses. To which the president replied, I don't care. I believe Putin.
He doesn't listen to American intelligence. He doesn't listen to a lot of his advisors. He doesn't listen to the American people. He simply does what Putin tells him to do. And one of the things that Putin wants him to do is sell arms to Saudi Arabia. Now, he's not supposed to just willy-nilly be able to do this on his own, but the headline here from The Independent, Trump invokes emergency powers to sidestep Congress and sell arms to Saudi Arabia. So he's saying it's an emergency. We cannot wait for Congress. This absolutely has to happen right now, and he's just going to use this old law that says he can act with these emergency powers to sell weapons to terrorists, to sell weapons to the same government that helped fund and coordinate the attacks on 9/11. The people on those planes were not Iraqis, and they were not Afghanis. They were Saudis, and the reason for that is because they got support from their government. Never forget how quickly we forget and how cool we are now with Trump selling arms to terrorists.
The House has passed the Equality Act, a bill to expand gay rights.
This is not about tolerance. This is about respect of our LGBTQ community. This is about taking pride.
Speaker Nancy Pelosi says the bill prohibits discrimination based on sexual orientation or gender identity. Georgia's Doug Collins was among the Republicans voting no.
Making one group of people deny their faith while trying to give another one a leg up is still wrong. It's not equal. So the questions that we have here today is honest disagreement.
President Trump is expected to veto the bill if it reaches his desk.
To veto the bill. This is a tale of two parties. The people that are trying to protect the LGBT community and the people that are not. And the people that are actively fighting against them. A tale of two parties. The Democrats right now are trying to get you more rights, trying to get you more pay, trying to get you more access to health care. And the Republicans are trying to take it away. Think of it this way. The Democrats are fighting for the LGBTQ and working people, and the Republicans are fighting to get rights for rapists. Wait, what? What did I just say? The headline, Arkansas passes law to allow rapists to prevent victims who want an abortion. So you, and all these red states, you don't have a right to an abortion, but if you get raped and you end up pregnant, then they can sue for custody. And you might even have to visit your rapist in prison so that they can see the child that they've raped you to. Yeah, this is what they're fighting for. It's stunning to me that the Republicans have a majority anywhere when they're fighting to protect rapists.
So from a law enforcement perspective, I'm not an immigration expert, but from a law enforcement perspective, it's often the case that our most vulnerable populations, right, include members of the immigrant communities. They come from countries like El Salvador or Honduras or Guatemala or Mexico, where local police departments are not very good, not very competent, and can't always be trusted. Mm-hmm. Criminals know that. And we don't want criminals preying on the most vulnerable people in society. And so we need to encourage people to be comfortable, to come forward to law enforcement as victims, as witnesses, to report what they've seen. So at least one of the theories behind sanctuary cities is that if you come forward, if you report yourself to a police officer or to an administrator in your city or your community, you're not going to get turned into immigration and deported. And that's one of the rationales behind it. I'm not saying it's I'm not making an argument per se for sanctuary cities. I'm trying to explain, though, why we need our immigrant community to be comfortable with law enforcement and to be willing to come forward. And so the notion that you would punish sanctuary cities for taking this approach and for embracing their immigrant community strikes me as crazy.
It's about protecting people. And that's the truly Christian thing to do. And I am for sanctuary cities. I'm for sanctuary states. I am for sanctuary Cascadia, which has now become a reality. This from the plain dealer, Washington becomes a sanctuary state, joining Oregon and California. We three states. Now, it's okay. We will protect you because we practice the Christian values that the GOP and the president says that they are practicing. It's okay. We will do those things. And I am okay with that for any number of reasons. And it's not just the human aspect, but it is also the law enforcement aspect. You can't make people feel that way. And we know that the problem isn't brown people coming from the South, but instead it's the white people in power in Washington, D.C.
We're sending many of them to sanctuary cities. Thank you very much. I'm proud to tell you that was actually my sick idea.
And this needs to come to an abrupt end. It is not war. It is not racism. It is not greed that is going to give us the things that we need. Okay, don't talk to me about how Joe would have the best chance of beating him. No. Not any good, decent human being should have a solid chance of beating him. And the thing that we need right now is somebody that understands not just economics, but the power of kindness.
The President of the United States of America has a profound amount of power that comes with that microphone and the bully pulpit. And we can no longer afford to have a President of the United States who uses that position with the intent to divide, with the intent to sow hate and division, with the intent to belittle and to beat down. We just had our book reading today with those wonderful students in Dearborn, and the subject of the book was kindness. Let me tell you how much our president could learn from a fourth grader.
And with that, I'm going to leave it. I hope that I've given you something to chew on today. I hope that I've really given you something to think about. And even though, over the course of this show, I have not had the widest audience, those that I have had, I hear from every so often, and I really appreciate it. And I just hope that not that you necessarily turn people onto this show, but that the things that you hear here, because we practice kindness and love, I hope that you'll take those ideas, go to your family, go to your friends, make those cases, and let's get out of the hell that we have put ourselves in. Thank you for being here on The Fire You Can't Put Out. Find us on Facebook.com at Facebook/TFYCPO, because even once this show goes silent, if it comes back up again, that's where you're going to hear about it. Questions, comments, or hate mail, just a general statement or inquiry, send me your hate mail. I'm down with it. TFYCPO@gmail.com. We are the fire you can't put out, and we will prevail, rejecting austerity in favor of prosperity. Special thanks to Kevin for producing, and thank you for listening. This is Melvin signing off, and now that I've woken you up, go wake up your friends and neighbors. Yo, good morning.